طفلة تمتطيه قوس قزح، طفلة.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly broadcast of news, analysis, commentary, and discussion of issues relevant to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's brutal occupation and colonization of their homeland. The purpose of This Week in Palestine is to feature the Palestinian narrative, the Palestinian voice, that is too often missing in the presentation of news and analysis in the American mainstream media. You are perhaps familiar with the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, a right-wing think tank that drafts right-wing legislation and then lobbies Congress as well as state legislators to introduce and press passage of their drafted bills. They have had enormous success enacting their right-wing agendas, both at the federal and state level. There is an Israeli counterpart, Qohelet, a right-wing, U.S.-funded Israeli think tank that shapes policy and law in the United States and Israel. Qohelet exercises enormous power, flying under the radar both in Israel as well as in the United States. This morning in a forum sponsored by the Foundation for Middle East Peace, we take a critical look at Qohelet through the eyes of journalists and activists who have been dealing with Qohelet for years.
Hello and welcome. I'm Sarah Ann Minkin, Director of Programs and Partnerships at the Foundation for Middle East Peace. Welcome to Spotlight on the Qohelet Policy Forum, how a far-right, U.S.-funded Israeli think tank is working to shape policy and law in both the U.S. and Israel. As Israel's far-right has gained political influence and momentum, including the current government's plans for judicial reform, the Qohelet Policy Forum, a formerly low-profile, high-impact Israeli think tank, has been making headlines, increasingly making headlines. These headlines include articles in the New York Times and Haaretz and The Intercept. We're going to be posting these links. They're all going to be available on our website. Two key parts of this story are insufficiently understood and examined by the media. These are the ties between Qohelet and right-wing fellow travelers and funders in the United States, and also Qohelet's years-long efforts to influence policy and law, not only in Israel, but also in the United States, both at the state and federal level. So today we're holding a conversation among experts who have been researching and documenting the activities and funding of the Qohelet Policy Forum, including its transnational connections and the impact of its work in the US and in Israel-Palestine. I am truly delighted to be here today with four experts in this field who I'm going to introduce in alphabetical order. First, Ron Cohen. He's a media campaign and strategy consultant, as well as a social and political activist. He's the founder of the Democratic Bloc, which supports civil society organizations in Israel, including through media support and investigative research. Ron is a former director of Physicians for Human Rights Israel. Lara Friedman is the president of the Foundation for Middle East Peace. She's a leading authority on the Middle East with particular expertise on U.S. foreign policy in the region, on Israel-Palestine, and on the way Middle East and Israel-Palestine related issues play out in Congress and in U.S. domestic politics, policies, and legislation. Yusuf Munayer is a non-resident fellow at Arab Center, Washington, D.C. He writes on the Arab-Israeli conflict and is a member of the editorial committee of the Journal of Palestine Studies. He is widely published and holds a PhD in international relations and comparative politics from the University of Maryland. And Iran Nissan is the CEO of Mechazkim, which is a progressive digital movement that promotes the values, ideas, and solutions of the Israeli left. Prior to joining Mechazkim, Iran headed the education and advocacy department at Peace Now. Haran holds a BA in political science and philosophy from Ben-Gurion University and an MA in emergency and disaster management from Tel Aviv University, and he is a certified dog trainer. So we're going to start with you, Haran. We're going to start with why we're talking about Qohelet now, about the regime change in Israel. So I want to ask you to start, what is the Qohelet Policy Forum? Where is it based? Broadly, what is its agenda? What is its vision for Israel as a society? And who are some of the major names and people associated with the organization?
So first of all, thank you very much for this platform. I think that it's an important conversation. And I will say that Ran and myself, we work together, we are colleagues, and we've been waiting for over 2 years that the Qohelet will be not a household name, but at least in the spotlight. So the Qohelet Policy Forum is the most influential organization in Israel today that influences the current Israeli government policies. And it's been published that the Qohelet Policy Forum orchestrated the judicial overhaul. It's a think tank, and I think that to just call it a think tank is to misrepresent what they're doing, because it's been more than a decade that Qohelet have been operating, and they're not the same strategy. They're not the same impact that maybe an American, even a very influential American think tank. They far exceeds the regular works of a think tank, research, legislative arm, position papers. What Qohelet Policy Forum are, they are the locomotive, the spear front of a bigger ecosystem of ultra-conservative, neoliberal, settlement Jewish supremacists that are leading a long-term ideological and political project to bring, to import the ideas of the fringes of the Republican Party, the talking points, the issues, the values, the ideas, and to combine them with the most right-wing, hardcore annexation arm in Israel. The Qohelet Policy Forum was established on January 2012. And in this decade, they reached maybe unprecedented power inside of the Israeli political system. Ran maybe can afterwards talk about what they've been doing in the past decades. But in this context, right now, we're talking about them because they are the ones that wrote the policies, the legislative initiative that are causing all the turmoil, the political crisis right now in Israel. Specifically, the ideas are something that to an American audience, just imagine the Koch brothers on steroids. That's the idea. Privatization of healthcare and education, annexation of the West Bank, an assault on unions and workers' rights. And right now we're talking about undermining the separation of power, the checks and balances in Israel's government. And their vision is something that is very radical, very extreme, very dangerous as I see it, but very foreign. It's something that to an Israeli ear is foreign. The ideas, the talking points are something that maybe are very, let's say, normal in the American political discourse. But right now, Qohelet are the ones that are leading the attack. They are the ones that are backing the politicians in Likud and in the settler right. And they're promoting not only the ideas, but they are the one that wrote the legislation. They are the one that give the support with cherry-picking research that turns into the campaign that the current coalition and government are leading. So we see them that they're well-funded, they're well-connected, they're very trained in leading these kinds of legislative projects in order to change Israel and to promote their vision that I mentioned before. I think I will stop now, and then we can go into the specifics of it later.
Terrific. Thank you. That was a great start. So talk to us about how you got interested in this work. Why did you start researching it? And maybe, Ilan, maybe you'll start with that question.
Yes, well, thank you again for inviting us for this conversation. Coelet Forum has been active for the last decade or more, but yes, they've been active behind the scenes and in the shadow. But in the last few years, we could see their influence becoming more and more public. And I think that the peak of that was Pompeo's statement and the fact that the Secretary of State actually stood there and thanked personally Coelet Forum. This is something that you don't see these high-ranking politicians thanking an NGO, but he took the step and the attention to actually give them the credit for helping with promoting the Pompeo statement that is actually, stating that the settlements in the West Bank are not contradicting the international law and so on, which is a major change in American politics. So that was a red sign for us when we looked at the political environment in Israel and understanding how much Coelet Forum is not discussed but is influential. And you could see that Pompeo, Netanyahu, and so on, together with people from Coelet Forum, standing on the same stage. And later on, a few months later, when the COVID-19 pandemic broke out, we could again see how much Coelet is influential in influencing the governmental policies around dealing with the pandemic, which part of it was bringing up front ideas that were contradicting to any, say, Israeli social values, like canceling the minimum wage as part of dealing with the economical crisis that the pandemic brought, or exempting employers from paying social benefits, limiting financial assistance to families and workers, and so on. So Coelet became more and more influential or out there. And that led us to look a little bit more deeper into their work and into their finances and donations as well. But also we need to remind ourselves that we are working here in a context where the left-wing camp is constantly attacked about its funding, about its activities, about its role, and so on, while the right wing, we know nothing about. It's working there without any criticism at all. And part of it was an attempt to actually go deeper and understand not only Coelet Forum, but how does the right wing work in Israel, and where does it get its money from, and where do they get their agenda from, and where do they get the sources of influence, and so on. So yes, I think that we can put the Pompeo statement as the first sign that made us think that, okay, this is something that we should look deeper into. And we found, a bigger story than that.
Great, thank you. So the Pompeo statement was, if I'm not mistaken, that was 2019, and then COVID in 2020. And so it's been developing. So before we launch deeper into what's happening with the Israeli government right now and the plans and Coelet's influence and part in that role, can you talk about how it has advanced its agenda up until this point in Israel? What are some of the laws and policies it has worked to enact? And what are some of the laws and policies it has worked also to block? Like, give us its first tier and its second tier priorities.
Yeah, I can start with the first here a little bit, or just the highlights. So, yeah, Pompeo Declaration is one thing, but we can also talk about the regulation law that actually tried to retroactively legalize Israeli settlements, and that, and of course, the nation state law, a law that was very controversial in Israel, polarizing between between Arabs and Jews, between the right and the left, and so on, and is seen as a racist law that declares Israel as an exclusive Jewish state, and so on. So this is the first tier, the nation state law, the regulation law, and what we see today, the judicial coup that is happening, the override clause, the changing of the committee to appoint judges, the legal advisors law, and so on. These are the, let's say, the first and foremost, the most important issues that Kohelet is promoting on the political part. There are also economical issues that they're advancing, looking much more into privatization of education system, of healthcare, and so on. And I think maybe Eran could talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so we can see that throughout the years, Kohelet were working behind the scenes, and maybe that's one of the sources of their strength, because they weren't very keen on taking credit. And even in, so this project is, they would like us to call them conservatives. We don't call them conservative. This is too easy. This is frames the discussion in this conservative versus liberal, which is not in Israel. It's Jewish supremacists against the equality camp. But in the first conservative convention, or like the neocons of Israel convention, Moshe Koppel, an American-born, the founder and president of Kohelet, he stands there, and maybe he felt a little bit more too comfortable. And he said, like, these are the things that we're going to work. And one of the things, he said, we don't need to take credit. The credit goes to the politicians. If they mess it up, it's on them. If they succeed, they should take the credit. If we're not very minded on getting our logo and our signature and the credit on everything, we can get things done. And by doing that, they tied. So using this method of not taking credit allowed them to create very close relationships with Naftali Bennett and Gideon Saar, with Ayelet Shaked and Nir Barkat, with Amir Ohana, and even now in this government with people like Bezalel Smotrich. The fact that they can provide the support system and also the campaign system. So in relations to what we're talking about right now, the attack, the assault on separations of power, and specifically on the Supreme Court, what the Kohelet policy forum and this ultra-conservative ecosystem, they identified the sources of left-leaning, or let's say more liberal and democratic institutions, or the power centers. So the academia, journalism or free press, the Supreme Court, civil society, and organized labor. And in the past decades, they directed their efforts in order to undermine each and every one of these power centers. So right now we see the Supreme Court as being the main thing in the conversation. But in the back, we hear the Minister of Communications, Shlomo Kali, an extreme right-wing politician. He wanted to appoint a former high-ranking Kohelet researcher to be the director of the Ministry of Communications, to be the contractor to dismantle public the broadcasting, but also free journalism. We can see yesterday, Bezalel Smotrich, the Minister of Finance, directed his office to sue the Histadrut, the biggest and oldest workers' union in Israel, for threatening a strike last week as part of the resistance to this overhaul. And we can see efforts directed at all five of these power centers. And they do this by working top down So with the politicians directly providing legislation and the legal advice that they need and the policy papers and the support, but also bottom up. Qohelet has been pouring money into right-wing civil society to reorganize how the right wing in Israel operates. And this can be said on the pro-annexation, pro-settlements organizations. We can talk about how they co-opt the Forum for Civil Society, which is a right-wing knockoff of Shatil and Ayef, to provide capacity building operation for right-wing civil society, but also how they work to frame the discourse. And they frame the discourse as this confrontation between the elected representatives of the people and then the professional bureaucrats, the people that are the gatekeepers in the legal system, in the finance system, in civil society, because they are the ones, they are the obstacles on their way to annex the West Bank, to dismantle the welfare state, and do all the horrible things that we talked about before.
Maybe I'll just jump and add that we can also see now how, for example, the head of the of Qohelet's legal department is now an official part of the negotiation, is a representative of the coalition in the negotiation between the coalition and the opposition around the judicial overhaul legislation. And there are only four representatives. He's one of them. A Qohelet researcher was appointed recently vice general director in the education ministry and so on. But more importantly, it's not just what they're doing, it's what they're not doing. And there are a few issues that Qohelet are a bit more careful with touching. And these are what they're calling Caesar issues. These are issues that are dividing between the right itself, between the right camp itself. And these are religion and state. This is an issue that Qohelet Forum is not touching. Abortions, not discussed at all. Moving from a people's army to a more professional army. This is also something that Qohelet is not doing. And legalization of prostitution or drugs. These are Caesar issues that are dividing among the right-wing camp. And this is where they don't do any work because they understand this is not for their benefit, at least for the moment.
And when you say religion and state, Ron, which issues are you referring to?
Whether it's the rabbinical courts and their role in Israel society, whether it's laws like even seen recently, or whether it is allowed to enter with chametz. Chametz is like bread in Pesach, in Passover, to hospitals, dividing. Or dividing state and religion and so on. These are issues, whether public transportation will work on Saturday or not, whether women can be a part of rabbinical courts, issues like that are issues that are dividing between the right-wing camp, and this is where they're not active or very minimalistic approach.
Great. Thank you. Thank you both.
Can I add just one thing that it's important to understand that the division in right wing and left wing in Israel is very, very unique. And when we imagine the potential base of Qohelet that these Caesar issues divide, on one hand, you have secular libertarian, like atheists, that they don't tread on me crowd that we want a Grover Norquist. I don't want to abolish government. I just want to make it small enough so I can drag it into the shower and drown it in the bathtub. Like, we want a very, very small government. And on the other hand, you have the settler, hardcore, ultra orthodox community that they are very, very pro annexation and pro settlements. And just imagine something like expanding settlements. Expanding settlements could be a scissor issue because it's to expand public spending, because we're doing public housing in the occupied territories. And one would have thought or could think that taking privately owned Palestinian land is something that would be ideologically problematic for someone who believes in liberty and personal rights. But the Kohelet Policy Forum, you said first tier, second tier, they're annexationist settlement, messianic, ultra-Orthodox dream, take precedence on their neoliberal, economic, right-wing, libertarian ideas. So when you put them in the corner, you say, should we take privately owned Palestinian land and expand public spending of the government in order to build more settlements? They will say, yes. It's not a problem for them because they prioritize this Jewish supremacy over the other stuff.
I thank you so much for all of that clarification. And I think that that's really important for our audience. If you listen to Moshe Koppel in his own words, he'll say, we are both libertarian and conservative. And it seems confusing to imagine how a libertarian would want government to expand in the ways that they want government to expand and take control in terms of annexation and settlement. So you've presented that to us and the priorities in terms of what their Jewish agenda is. Very clearly, and I appreciate that. I want to ask you one more question before we intentionally bring Lara and Yusuf deeper into this conversation. What is happening right now with the judicial reform? What is Kohelet's role in this regime change, judicial and legislative overhaul? Speak to us specifically about in what ways Kohelet is involved, please.
So Kohelet has been pushing this campaign for this very necessary changes to the judicial system for years now. They were one of the prominent voices talking about the need to weaken the Supreme Court, to create ways that the parliament, the Knesset, can override Supreme Court's judicial review. And we've seen them pushing it through videos, policy papers, conventions, but it all culminated on January 4th, where Yariv Levin, the newly appointed Minister of Justice, presented his first step of a three-step plan to change Israel's democracy or to do a regime change. And he started his speech by thanking Aviad Bakshi from the Kohelet Policy Forum. So you see, again, we have an organization that is insisting on staying behind the scenes, but Michael Pompeo is spilling the beans, or Yariv Levin is spilling the beans by saying, a lot of people worked on this thing, but I want to specifically thank the Kohelet Policy Forum or Aviad Bakshi. And this first step was consisted out of four different legislations that, due to a very successful and persistent public resistance and demonstrations and protests, three out of the four parts were suspended for now. And the fourth part, which is the most important one to Kohelet, to the coalition, but also to us, is the way that Israel appoints judges, and specifically Supreme Court judges. And this is very different than the United States. It's not a political, it's a different system, the parliamentarian system. And we had a committee that is consisted out of not only the opposition, the coalition, but also Supreme Court judges and members of the lawyers, like the Bar Association. And what this coalition is wanting to do is to take over, to make the process of selecting judges to be purely political and give the government almost total control on the selection of judges. And just to understand how dangerous this is, in Israel, we don't have separation of powers. The executive branch, the government, is sitting inside of the legislative branch, the parliament, the Knesset. The fact that a lot of the ministers are also members of Knesset means that this is one branch. And if you give the government / coalition, the parliamentarian majority, also total control on the selection of judges, you mean that you don't have separation of power at all. You don't have checks and balances. Kohelet are the architects of this thing. So I will tie it with like the image or the metaphor. We've been talking on running over the Supreme Court with a D9, with a big tractor. This was like the image, because it was a right-wing politician that says that we need to run over the Supreme Court. Now, a regular think tank might have said, yes, the Supreme Court should be demolished with the use of a tractor. But Kohelet, because they're heavily funded, because they're deeply connected, because they have also standing in the right-wing conservative media, they're not just saying we need to demolish the court. They are the ones that are paying for the tractor. They are the one that trained the driver of the tractor. They are the ones that make sure that there is a positive campaign in the media, reviewing how it's important, how it's the best thing to demolish the Supreme Court with this tractor. And they are the ones that will hold hands with the politicians on the ruins of the Supreme Court and with it as well, democracy, and applaud themselves about how, what a nice job we've done.
Thank you. Speaking of that funding, speaking of their deep pockets, Yusuf, I want to turn to you. Can we talk about the U.S. role, both with respect to the leadership of Kohelet Policy Forum and to its funding?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, there's a number of different ties here that connect folks, you know, at Kohelet to the United States and individuals in the United States and activities in the United States. The founder, of course, of Kohelet, Moshe Koppel, is an American from New York who moved to Israel. Of course, in the New York Times story, he claims that Kohelet is the brains behind the Israeli right wing. If anyone has been looking for the brains behind the Israeli right wing for some time, we've found them now. He also insists, as has been mentioned, on working quietly and without getting credit, which I think is very important, and I'll return to that later. Eugene Kantorovich, of course, who's a director at Kohelet, moved to the United States as a child from Ukraine, and then later moved to Israel in 2013. Although I believe he lives or has lived in a settlement in the West Bank. He's, of course, active transnationally. He was a major force behind unconstitutional anti-BDS legislation. And he's also tied to the Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs, where he's been listed as a fellow. And the JCPA, the Jerusalem Center, is a nexus of individuals who've cooperated closely, of course, with the Israeli government's global repression efforts against Palestine activism, many of them working in Israel, but also in the United States at different times. Another connection is through a fellow named Jerome Marcus, who's a fellow at the Kohelet Forum, and he's involved in a U.S.-based lawfare organization called the DEBRA Project. Marcus was also the attorney that represented Donald Trump in an election lawsuit in Pennsylvania, again in Pennsylvania in November 2020. And going deep down the rabbit hole several years, he's also known for having been the person who tipped off Ken Starr many years ago about Monica Lewinsky's relations with President Bill Clinton in January of 1998. So politically, these folks are very much on the right. Many of them have connections for years with the U.S.-based Federalist Society, a major force within right-wing politics here in the United States. The funders, the reporter funders, Arthur Danchik and Jeffrey Yaz, are important to kind of pay attention to here. Yaz, of course, is a Pennsylvania-based right-wing billionaire and mega donor to right-wing causes and ideology. His donations have fueled groups here in the United States and many of them locally in Pennsylvania that have worked on union busting, banning abortion and the so-called critical race theory, fighting against climate regulation, really a wide range of sort of right-wing activities. He's also a major donor to something called the Club for Growth, alongside Richard Uihlein, which is a 501c4 that backs Republican candidates. Uihlein has also been reportedly connected through financing with several groups that were implicated in the January 6th insurrection at Capitol Hill. Danchik is a partner with Yass in this Susquehanna International Group, which is their joint business. And together they do philanthropic giving through something called the Claus Foundation. This foundation supports a range of right-wing and libertarian causes and also right-wing Zionist groups. It's a U.S.-based 501c3, and so is something called the American Friends of Kohelet. But despite the transparency required of such groups in the U.S., Clause does not appear to directly fund American Friends of Kohelet, but people should check out the Haaretz reporting on how those connections do exist. Instead, and this is so common in this universe of giving for these causes, it likely passes through pass-throughs, like donor-advised funds. For example, the 990s, the tax returns of the Clause Foundation and American Friends of Kohelet do show connections if you dig deep enough. And Clause, for example, gave to a donor-advised fund called Fidelity Investments Charitable Trust. And the way these funds work is, you know, they'll take your money and they'll essentially direct them to where you want them to go. And they act as a kind of cover for these activities so that donors can support causes that they don't necessarily want to be tied to publicly. And you can look in some of the years in which the Clause Foundation gave to Fidelity. Fidelity gave similarly large amounts in those same years to American Friends of Kohelet, which of course then passes on the funds to the Kohelet Forum in Israel. This is actually super common and goes against the very principles of transparencies that these organizations, these 501c3 organizations, are supposed to adhere to. Last, I would just say, after the Haaretz expose, it's understood that the funding mechanism shifted to something called the Central Fund of Israel, which, despite the name, is actually not based in Israel, but is based in New York. It's a U.S.-based, again, 501c3. And this is very much a black hole, when it comes to the funneling of money to Israel for many right-wing Zionist organizations, including in many settlements. And this acts as a central pass-through for many philanthropists who want to support some of these right-wing causes, but do not necessarily want to take the credit or have the credit assigned to them, which brings us back to this principle of sort of secrecy or behind the scenes support. So these connections are, of course, significant, and there are many of them. And these are actors that are working really in the United States and in Israel, and oftentimes doing so very seamlessly, as if there is no geographic divide.
Laura, so I want to ask you, this transatlantic alliance that Iran and Yusuf and Iran have laid out for us, talk to us about specifically focusing on the U.S. What are the laws and the policies that Kohelet or individuals or organizations that are associated with them that they're working to see adopted and enacted in the U.S. and on both the federal and the state levels?
Sure. And thank you. And thanks to everyone else on this webinar. It's really a rich discussion. I do want to just very quickly pick up on the funding question, one piece of it. And if folks listen to or watch the interview with Moshe Kopel that he did at the 10-year anniversary, which I think was put into the chat, there's a really telling moment at the end when the interviewer asks about the funding and who the funders are. And he says, well, we respect the privacy of our funders, which is really rich coming from an organization which led the effort in Israel to pass a law that effectively says the left has to say its funders or it proves that they're foreign agents. It's a really quite a gutsy statement. In terms of the U.S. side of it, look, like Iran and Ron, I mean, like, I'm really happy to see people talking about Kohelet. I think myself and Yusuf and others who work on the U.S. side of laws targeting the Israel-Palestine issue have been paying attention to Kohelet for a long time and wishing other people would. I first became aware of Kohelet back in 2014, 2015, when a guy named Yudin Kantorovich suddenly burst on the scene. And from my perspective, he seemed to be everywhere. He was writing in the Washington Post articles effectively arguing in favor of You know, whatever Israel did was legal under international law, and here's why. And he and I sparred a bit in print on the question of whether or not the U.S. should effectively erase the Green Line and treat settlements as no different from Israel during the Obama era. His argument was, of course, that yes, they should, and that Obama was wrong to not treat settlements as part of Israel. But then, you know, you sort of see this, you see this develop. And I want to be clear for people who are listening, you know, the interesting thing with Kohelet Forum is while they're not big at self-promotion, they're very much on the record. So it's not really like you shouldn't attribute intent. I'm very much against attributing intent to anyone, but I am in favor of taking them at their word. So for instance, you know, Yusuf mentioned U.S. laws, laws that have been found unconstitutional by numerous courts. Supreme Court declined to rule, but at this point, they're still considered unconstitutional in numerous courts. I mean, Eugene Kantorovich has publicly taken credit for this legislation. I pulled up his bio that he submitted when he testified in Congress in 2015. And in the bio, it said, Professor Kantorovich also plays a leading role in the drafting of laws about Israel boycotts in U.S. states. So it's not some conspiracy to say there's this role. Whether he does it in the name of himself or the university he's working for at the time or Kohelet Forum, it's him, and he is the director of the international law program at Kohelet Forum, and he is effectively claiming, and I believe him, to be a key, if not the lead drafter in legislation, which is now spread across the majority of U.S. states seeking to quash free speech of American citizens, or he would argue quashing to completely legally bar them from boycotting things that Israel doesn't want boycotted. And he's testified in Congress, just to be clear, in terms of impact, testifying in Congress is a big deal. Most of us have never testified in Congress, or if we do, it will be a rare thing. You know, groups like the Foundation for Defense of Democracy, FDD, during the Trump era were constantly in Congress. Okay, Eugene Kantorovich testified in Congress 8 times between 2015 and 2020, and seemed to be out there laying out policy recommendations that were reflective of the Israeli government view and that were generally adopted and articulated by Republicans on every issue you can think of. And this included attacking the Palestinians. It included mobilizing against BDS and calling for legislation against BDS. He testified twice on the need to move the embassy to Jerusalem and why the Obama administration was violating U.S. law. And for instance, on the sovereignty in the Golan. And this really, you know, there's a very direct line between this legislation, it would seem to me, and Secretary of State Pompeo in 2020 declaring the Pompeo Doctrine at a Kohelet Policy Forum event. So there's the very strong U.S. side of this, which is, you know, now that the world is suddenly paying attention to Kohelet in Israel, I think they maybe are missing the story in the U.S., which is that while Kohelet has quietly been enormously active and effective, let's give them credit, tremendously effective in Israel at shaping the political currents to where we are today. In the U.S., they have played, I would say, a parallel, enormously effective and quiet role of shaping U.S. policy to where it is today when it comes to anything related to Israel-Palestine. And this is something that is, I think, again, whenever we talk about outside influence, there's nothing illegal about this. I mean, you can like it or dislike it. This is how the game is played. They've played it enormously effectively. The fact that they've played it without any real scrutiny is, I think, something that is maybe of more interest. The last thing I'll say here, and this speaks to the broader agenda. Obviously, I focus on the Israel-Palestine piece of the agenda. I would encourage people, if they're trying to understand who Kohelet is in the U.S. and how it relates to Israel, to look at CPAC. I mean, there's two things. One, the model of how they operate in the U.S. parallels how they operate in Israel, which is similar, in my view. The thing it is most similar to is ALEC, right? The American Legislative Exchange Council. Again, going back to Moshe Koppel's interview, he talks about why they're so effective. And he's clear, it's not just that we have great ideas and great policy papers, and we talk to politicians. No, we come with draft legislation. And that is the model that they have also followed. I don't want to say replicated. I don't want to say which came first. They've certainly followed that model in the U.S. to great effect. but I would also say look at CPAC. And most tellingly, I would say look at Eugene Kantorovich's appearance at CPAC in, I think it was 2022, when CPAC was held in Hungary, in Budapest for the first time. And listen to him as he describes a worldview. And it is a worldview where railing against wokeism, railing against recycling. I mean, there's a great line in there where he rails against the having different colored bins to put your garbage in, fits in seamlessly with the Israel's rights to the land, or the entire anti-woke agenda linked to the Judeo-Christian Jewish supremacy agenda, which says that what Israel is doing is right and just, and if you are part of this overarching anti-woke, I'm going to use that language, agenda, and supporting Israel is a piece of it. And honestly, that video is something that everyone should watch.
So Yusuf, talk to us a little bit more. Lara just laid all of this out to us from a policy perspective, but can you focus specifically around the issues of free speech and activism when it comes to Palestinian rights and in Israel also, and look at the role of Qohelet as it relates to that broader story?
Yeah, I mean, I think with all of the things that we've discussed today, there were two elements that really, to me, seemed to be very common with a lot of what we see in so many of the efforts to target free speech and activism on this issue. One of them is around sort of the shadowy giving and the lack of transparency in finances. And the other is this idea of, not wanting to take credit or standing in the background of certain activities. This reminded me very much of something that the Ministry of Strategic Affairs, which of course was the Israeli government agency tasked with going after the boycott, divestment, and sanctions, called the no logo policy. And it was a principle in which they operated under. And the idea here was that they did not want to have their logo. They did not want to have their branding. They did not want to be taking credit for the activities that were silencing dissent for a couple reasons. Because number one, it wouldn't really look good to have a government taking credit for these activities, but also because they didn't want to complicate the relationships they had with their partners, who did not necessarily want to be seen as working directly with a government to achieve these outcomes. Interestingly enough, a fellow at the Qohelet Forum was formerly an official at the Ministry of Strategic Affairs, and he's written extensively on how Israeli foreign affairs should be reformed, including around the fight on BDS. This no logo policy was one of the reasons why the Ministry of Strategic Affairs created something called CONCERT, which many of the viewers and listeners might be familiar with. And this was a public benefit corporation, which essentially was put together so that you can have this plausible deniability, so that you can have actors receiving money from one entity without necessarily having to be seen as connected to it. Mr. Koppel might say it's because they respect the privacy of their donors. The Ministry of Strategic Affairs said it's because they don't want the notion that these finances are connected to these activities to become public knowledge. And of course, one of the main funders, if not the largest funder behind CONCERT, we know this from their audited financial statements, was the Central Fund for Israel. Once again, the place where everybody seems to go to funnel money to stuff that they don't want to be associated with in Israel. I agree with Laura that it's ironic that Qohelet is entangled in so much of this, because Koppel's political project prior to founding the Qohelet Policy Forum was drafting legislation at the time with the Likud MK, Michael Eitan, that required Israel-based NGOs to report funding they received from entities abroad. But of course, this was tailored to target human rights NGOs, which receive funds from European government foundations and not right-wing groups like Qohelet and others, who raise massive funds from right-wing U.S. philanthropists. Eitan said at the time of the bill, when there is a political debate in Israel in which bodies funded by a foreign country participate, it's important that the public know who's behind them and who is funding the activity. So yes, that sounds very rich today, and it sounds hypocritical. But importantly, I think in some ways, while this might seem like hypocrisy and a double standard, within a particular worldview, it is perfectly consistent. And I think that's what's important to understand here. If you think, as Kohelet does, who's behind the nation state bill, that Israel is a state for the Jewish people, and importantly here, not the citizens of Israel, but the Jewish people, donations that come from right-wing, pro-Israel, Zionist, Jewish philanthropists in the United States are still coming from within that polity, are still coming from within that group. But donations from European governments are not. And so, you know, I think when it comes to transparency and democracy and pluralism, this is obvious hypocrisy. But within the worldview that they ascribe to, they don't see anything wrong with this. And I think this is part of the fundamental debate that's playing out within Israel today. Who gets to decide the direction of this country? Right? Who gets to decide the policies of the state? And for Israelis in the streets, it's primarily a debate between secular Israelis and religious ones. And of course, the people most affected, Palestinians, are left out altogether. But among Israeli Jews, this is, I think, the central debate, and it intersects a lot with what...
And there you have it. Government controlled by the right in Israel and in the United States. The kind of U.S. funding Kohelet commands allows them to buy political connections, which is how the minority right wing controls governments, including ours. Before we go, a reminder that the Cambridge Bethlehem People to People Project will be presenting a new Zoom virtual forum series called Voices from Palestine. It will feature voices from the ground in the West Bank and Gaza. On April 30th, 2023, that's next Sunday, at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, the hour-long program will launch with a discussion with Kitam Edelby, who is an expressive therapist and activist living in East Jerusalem. She works on the ground in the West Bank with formerly incarcerated young men, Bedouin women, children, and teachers. Kitam fosters healing in towns and villages and refugee camps in Palestine. As a Palestinian, her work is not just about creative therapy. It is resistance and resilience in the face of stress and trauma created by occupation. To learn more about the project and to register for the first program, just type into your computer's search engine, Cambridge Bethlehem People to People Project. It will bring you to their webpage. At the top of the homepage, you will see Voices from Palestine. Click on it to register. Thank you for joining us this morning on This Week in Palestine, a weekly feature of Truth and Justice Radio. You'll find us here at 90.3 FM every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. Eastern Time, where you can also stream us live on your computer at WZBC.org. Please tune in again next week for another edition of This Week in Palestine. This is your host, John Roberts, hoping you will get involved in the struggle to bring justice to the Palestinian people. See you next week.